Blog Talk Radio.
Marshall, can we just talk about this for 1 second?
You rescued her. You raised her. You're not protecting her now. You are holding her back.
One, don't you ever touch me again. Two, don't you ever touch me again. Now, you have no idea who the hell I am or where I've come from, and I'm not about to tell you my whole life story. All I need to be to you and everybody on this dome is a fixed point. The last man standing. I do not need your sympathy or your admiration. All I need is your compliance and your fighting skills. And if I can't get that, then you can go back to the wall that I found you crawling on. Do I make myself clear?
Yes, sir.
Good.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane.
No, it's Max, Darryl, and D-Bert, your host for the Comic Shop Show.
Folks, it's the Afro Nerd. With enough of the pretense, time is abound. Our apologies, not on us. Blog Talk. I had to contact the folks in tech to reboot the show. Captain, just come on in. The beam has already taken place. The beaming up. Forget about all that stuff. Again, folks, this is the Grindhouse. Albeit late, I think we're just going to do a 90-minute show, Captain. We're just going to go all the way through. We're going to mix it up a little bit because that's the way it is. We're going. Darryl, hopefully, will get back to us. I think he might have just given up. Oh, here he is. Terrific.
Here he is.
Okay, let me bring him in.
Darryl,
I have no idea. It's a conspiracy. They're against us. I saw 12 Years a Slave. They are against us, shouting out Q-Storm. It is the way it is. They're trying to put us back. Yeah, I said it. Darryl, if you could hang on, we're just going to do a whole 90-minute or what have you show because everything has been kind of discombobulated.
Not a problem. You got a wheel? Put the topics on a wheel, spin them, and let's do this.
Yeah, we're just going to do it. We did this before, folks, and we kind of combined both shows. We're going to do that as a gift to our audience because, again, Blog Talk effed up. Not I. Sometimes it is the Afro Nerd, not this time. So we're just going to get into it, gentlemen. Again, ring their alarm. We'll do everything. We'll just make this into an audio gumbo. So it is what it is. Folks, feel free to come on in as well, 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. This is going to be a true Grindhouse Afro Nerd Comic Shop mashup. So we're going to get into a lot of different things for the 90 minutes or so. All right. First of all, let's talk about DC moving to L.A. I'm upset. Dow, unpack this for us. We probably should have seen this coming, I believe, 3 years ago. DC Entertainment moved out to L.A., and the writing was on the wall. Now the printing operations, the true comic book imprint, is moving out of Gotham, literally out of Gotham, to L.A. What does this mean?
It doesn't mean anything for the big stars because the big stars go whatever. It's the little guy that gets hurt, the guys that made their living working 9 to 5, 8 to 6, doing the printing operations and everything, or the local help, in other words. Because when DC moves, you know, the big stars are able to move. They hold their summits everywhere, these writers. They're already going all over the country. It's the little worker for the business that gets hurt, because there's some workers there that have worked 15, 20, 30 years that are going to be out in this current job market now. You know, that's the way I look at it. As far as the uproar over them moving to New York, moving from New York to L.A., well, I look at it this way. As you just said, 3 years ago they talked about it, and most of their major superstars are already on the West Coast. So I didn't look at it from that way. I've always thought about the little guy since it got announced, all right? Because, you know, people don't understand, but in New York, that building was a staple, all right? In New York, you know, their workers, you'd run into them on the street. You'd run into, you know, and the building is actually a major landmark. You know, and one of my favorite things used to be taking tours of both their and Marvel offices in New York City. So, you know, I'll just say it like this, it'll be a loss, all right? Is it a crippling loss? No, because they've moved practically half of their operation out there already. This is just completing the move. But I'm thinking of the little guy here, or little girl, or, you know, who's worked for him a long time, all right? Captain?
Now, here's my question. Why was the move in process in the first place, why was it done, and does this have anything to do with the advent of the big theatrical screen, what's happening far as these properties on the silver screen? That's just the questions I pose.
Well, listen, okay. I think it's the writing has been on the wall. I mean, listen, even in business that's not a printing business, I mean, this is the way the corporate ball bounces. I've seen this personally, having worked for AIG a few years back, that when my office was having some financial issues, they moved their operations to Alpharetta, Georgia, and my colleagues were told, well, you have a choice, just like they were told at D.C. You can either look for something else or you can move with us. This is very much a corporate cultural thing. That when they decide to up and move, regardless of your familial situation, regardless of your children's schooling, regardless of your personal familial history, you have to make a decision. So this is very much a corporate way of things. I will say undoubtedly that the movie properties, all the ancillary business that's attached to DC entertainment, DC printing is on the low rung. Although DC printing is the seed, where the seed of the flower that blooms when it comes to these intellectual properties, Darryl knows this intimately, the DC printing end of it is not really pulling in the money. It's just not. Years ago, at the inception of DC properties, National Comics, in the 1930s, comic book publishing, they were selling millions of comics a month. Millions. Now, the numbers, a hit will be 60,000 a month. That will be considered a hit. Maybe 100,000 a month, if you're lucky. If your book sells 15, 20, 25, 30, it will be canceled. These are the numbers you're working with. Actually, you can think of it the way the recording industry works. You know, 1980, 1982, when Michael Jackson was at the height of his powers, he sold, what, 30 million records? Now a hit in the new era, you're lucky to go platinum. If you go gold, you're lucky. That's a hit. I don't even know what constitutes a hit in the recording market, because it's based on ringtones and downloads. So I would think that they're looking for some kind of synergy between what's happening as far as the movie-making end of it. I mean, L.A. is where it's at, and maybe there'll be, you know, a synergy of sorts. I want to ask Daryl this. Do you think Marvel will be too far behind in doing this? I mean, Marvel's properties are so intimately New York-related. I don't know how that's going to work. Peter Parker resides in Forest Hills, Queens. How's that going to work in L.A.? I'm just saying.
It doesn't matter. I'm telling you, it doesn't matter. Both of them are heavily into the movie industry, and with the digital initiatives, that puts paper at a less than a premium, shall we say. So you know what? I can see. Hell. 45% of Marvel's operation, you know, think about their big stars. Hickman's California. Bendis is Portland, Oregon. I think Slott's still New York. Brian Wood, I think, is L.A., or I think it's a switch of the two. You know, or but most of their major stars, like D.C., are on the West Coast. So it wouldn't shock me for Marvel to be doing the same way, especially with how much bigger the Marvel Studios has gotten in the last 15 years, you know? So that's all I'm saying. People, don't get shocked by this, all right? Because mainly also with the rising property prices in New York and the taxes involved in all of that, hey, I don't blame the movie, though. I'm just saying.
Just answering Q Storm's question, he's asking. Well, I want Daryl to weigh in on this because he was unfamiliar with the tours. But as far as the location of DC Comics, it was Midtown on Broadway.
Yeah.
I think 1600 or 1700 Broadway, something like that.
Yep.
It was definitely in the 50s Midtown, New York. That's where it was located. And mind you, still there's moments, but they're in the process of moving. So I just think sentimentally, I just have a problem with it.
Well, hey, even up until, there's still tours of the offices today. There's still tours. As a matter of fact, a couple of the cosplayers at the show told me they hit on their major things. And I was like, your major things? Yeah, we hit this show. We got to see Midtown Comics. We got to see Forbidden Planet because they had their own version over in Britain. Matter of fact, their version in Britain was the original Forbidden Planet, you know, so they got to see. And they hit DC and Marvel offices in New York, and they got to take pictures and stuff. And one of the things about the offices is both of them have major murals on walls. And some of the covers of their priceless comics, or most famous comics, up in their lobbies and all around their offices. So, you know, and for a comic book fan, it's a must see. Now with DC doing their move, they're nothing in the comics world is final, but I think they're gonna get a mad rush in the next coming months before the move is official of fans going there like, you know, this was always in the town. I never got to see it. They should get an influx of that. Back to you, Alphabet.
All right. Gentlemen, again, we're starting off late. I apologize to our audience, but this is going back to Blog Talk now. I'm going to put the blame where the blame clearly lies. But they were able to reboot us, so we are airing, and this is going to be a true grindhouse sandwich where we're going to talk about all things mixed up, going back from pulp culture to pop culture. So this is what I want to do. Daryl, did you happen to see, before we go to the break, did you happen to see 12 Years a Slave?
Yes, I finally got around to seeing it.
All right. Let's discuss it. And then we'll go back into comic book stuff. We'll talk about this, and then we'll go into Superheroes, the documentary, PBS. So we're going to make this truly a mashup. So, unfortunately, the captain did not see it. He assures us that he will see it in the next few days. So we'll be respectful to him. But I think this is going to be – I had I thought I shadowed Malcolm.
None of that respect stuff. Just go ahead into it.
Well, listen, let me just tell the audience. Let me tell the audience. Q Storm, especially. I, of all people, actually had a blackout moment, a public blackout moment, in the middle of the film. Got real tribal.
All right.
Yelled out something. Yelled out something. It is what it is. It's humorous, but I had a flash of anger. A flash. Just like Barry Allen. So, without further ado, see how everything can be connected tangentially? Let's go to a quick Nerdcore next, but this Nerdcore after this. Let's go to a classic, which is part of the urban alternative thing, and also to the captain. We're getting shout-outs for members of the Ohio Players to come on the program. People have hearing about us, Captain. I'm hearing Confunction wants to come on, and Ohio Players wants to come on the show, believe it or not. I got a call
great.
On this. We are penetrating, sir, all of us. We're doing what we're doing. So in honor of the Ohio Players, that was thrown out at me by a publicist. Let's go to one of their classics. This is Pain, which is apropos because of 12 Years a Slave, with 12 Years of Pain. We'll be right back. Let's groove. About 2 minutes. That was giving you the best of urban alternative classic groove, the Ohio Players. We have been getting feelers from their representatives, so hopefully we'll get someone from the Ohio Players. Also, shouting out to the captain, you know, I've been speaking about this book, Miss Anne in Harlem, about genteel white females that played a role, a significant role during the Harlem Renaissance, and that author, Dr. Carla Kaplan. I spoke with her publicist as well, so we're just trying to get a mutually agreeable time. So we're going to have a plethora of guests hopefully coming in to discuss it. she had to check us out. So I had to tell her, listen, we are a serious program. She saw the comic stuff. I said, well, listen, it's comic stuff, but there's also erudite intellectualism, even within the comic stuff. So I had to give, I had to introduce what we're about, Captain and Daryl, to understand that this is not kid stuff. Although you see comic books, it's a little deeper than that. Anyway, folks, this is a true mashup with not so much a demarcation at the 659-701 point. We're actually talking, we're just talking about everything right now. Pop culture, pulp culture, it's a sandwich. 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. This is the Grindhouse, the Comic Shop, Afternoon Radio. Now, gentlemen, this afternoon I actually checked out Steve McQueen's 12 Years a Slave. Phenomenal director. Not Bullets Steve McQueen from the 70s, or I should say 67, I think, 68. Not Bullets Steve McQueen, but the darker complected UK Brit, black Brit, Steve McQueen. Phenomenal director. He's worked with Michael Fassbender, Magneto himself. He's worked with him with a movie called Shame. I think he might have worked with him on another film, actually, besides this one. Brad Pitt was a producer on this program, in this movie. He also played a small role in the movie as well. A lot of phenomenal actors. Chiwetel Ejiofor, I'm always messing up his name. I'm pretty sure I will have the correct pronunciation around Oscar time. If all things go the way I think they're supposed to go, I can't see, well, you know, listen, I shouldn't say I can't see them not giving him an Oscar. It could happen. You know, it could happen. But they should definitely give him an Oscar. I'll go into it a little bit deeper, but I want to hear from Daryl. You saw it. Daryl, give us your thoughts. Give us what you thought about this thing.
You know what? It's difficult for me to express stuff about the movie because, well, for your other crowd that doesn't know me, I generally go to the movies to have a good time. I don't like being preached to. I don't like, you know, I generally want, that being said, this is a powerful film. It cannot be understated, you know, that, I just got to talk about personal problems that happened in the theater, all right? And I won't say problems because that makes it seem like something's wrong. But you don't know the guys coming out of the theater saying, during the movie, that was sitting behind me saying, I didn't realize there were three blacks that were. And I was like, and all I could do, they didn't realize that there was a whole system that people thought that even if a black had paperwork saying they were free, you know, that they could still be held under slavery in the wrong states. And guys that would be taken saying, this guy's an escaped slave. You know, and just be taken without any judicial protection. So they're talking about it while I'm sitting down looking at the movie, and I'm like, oh, this is some BS. And I was like, well, you should be thankful you live now. I shouldn't have said it. But you know what? They got quiet. Because I think the realization sat in that, oh, my God, for as much problems there are today, back then was much, much worse for guys of our persuasion or our complexion. Benedict Cumberbatch, Paul Giamatti, Brad Pitt, even though it was a small role, all right? Mr. Everford did a great job on this one because he had to go through the range of emotions, yet he didn't overact. You know, that's something this when dealing with this subject matter and being African-American, being black or being of African descent, there's a part of you that want to rage out your lines, that want to scream out your lines, that want to, you know, I'm filled with so much pent-up aggression, you know, that sort of thing. He was restrained. He gave his lines in, I mean, as you can see, it's a jumble where I'm thinking here, but I find this is the most difficult role for an actor, all right? And not many of them do it well. When you have a subject matter that hits close to home or hits close to heritage, yet be professional and talented enough to add, to turn all that passion into gravitas for the role. And he pulls it off here. I mean, we all lash out at the screen and scream and like, this is some, oh my God, you know, we can do that. But him in the role reading the lines, he can't. He's got to have the professionalism and the control to still do his lines with material that would drive anybody insane. I guess that's my best way of saying it. I mean, you had fun with Django, you know. You debated the merits of some of the stuff in The Butler, all right? But here, this touches, like, outrage, sympathy, and sadness all at the same time. And I don't think anybody could go into this movie and not learn a little about themselves. African-American speaking, Caucasian speaking, it just goes to show you that during that time, not everybody was evil. Or not everybody was pro-slavery, and we know that. But the movie also expressed the innate goodness in some folks that really didn't agree with those practices, if you catch that drift. Afro-Nerd, back to you. I think I rambled long enough on this one.
That's all right. It's that kind of film. Just to give further clarification to the audience without giving away so much, again, it's based on an actual book by the gentleman Solomon Northrop. Solomon Northrop was the man that LJ4 played, who was a free black man living in Saratoga, New York, Saratoga Springs, New York. And he lived a rather comfortable, well-heeled life. He was an in-demand musician, a violinist. He was highly educated, well-educated, erudite. He was with someone, he would be Barack Obama, 19th century style. And his family was intact. The black family was intact. He had his own home. He had white neighbors that treated him respectfully. You saw he lived a charmed life by anybody's standard. And what happened, essentially, he was tricked on a gig. He was promised, hey, listen, we heard about your musical prowess. We have some money for you. Let's go to D.C. Let's make this money. He was all about it. He ends up getting drugged. Next day, he's in chains. And all hell breaks loose. It's a rough road, ladies and gentlemen. It's a rough road, and it's a lot to unpack with this particular film. I will say jokingly that there were points in the film, because of my geekness or nerdiness, I was like, in my back of my head, I was like, when is Django coming? like Jimmy Olsen has his ring. His watch, and he can call Superman. I'm so much into Django having been that triumphant superhero. I said, Django's got to come in on this. He's got to save us. I say that jokingly, but that wasn't in the back of my head looking at this thing. But like Daryl said, in all respect to Quentin Tarantino, that was a fantasy. That was a fantasy. We do know there were some revolts. But at the core, that film was a fantasy. It was a gift card to the black community in some respects. This right here is about the realness. The thing that got me, and I might have mentioned this last week, even before I saw the film, and when you see it after the credits, you know, after the credits, it always gives you the historical backdrop as before the actual, you know, the grip and the actors and the executive producer, before that stuff comes down, they give you a little history. So, you know, Solomon Northrop gave you his life, what happened to him after how he wrote the book in 1853, I believe. And there's a point where they say that, you know, just how many people are – this wasn't that uncommon. There were other black folk that were kidnapped while in slavery. And I sat there and said, what? That disturbed me. The whole thing's a kidnapping. This is the part about the film that you have to really understand when you're looking at it. And they showed it in the film. Do you remember the part where he was reminiscing about his old life and he was buying a cloth for his wife, and then another black person comes into the store having wandered off away from his master, and he looked at Northrop's family in absolute disbelief, because this black man had such a charmed life that, you know, matter of fact, the storekeep had said to him, to the slave, not knowing he was a slave, you know, sir, I'll be with you in a minute. And then the slave owner comes in. He says, I'm sorry, he wandered off. And he just looked like, wow, look at here, look at this. But the main thing is that I don't feel comfortable that they made a distinction between Northrop having had this genteel, educated life and having been kidnapped because he was thoroughly westernized. That's not the issue. The issue was he is no different than the other black folk, and you found that out, obviously, because he was captured. But the bottom line is no one should have been a slave. Everyone was kidnapped. But to use the term kidnapped in slavery, it's like saying ice cream twice. ice cream. It's kidnapped. So that part was a little bit, and this is one more thing I got to mention too, Daryl, because they want to know. I mentioned at the top of the show that I had a blackout moment. You'll remember this too. It was very reminiscent of Jamie Foxx going after the first slavers. The first slavers, I forgot the name of, you know, they had a different name or whatever, but the part where he goes to Don Johnson's plantation, the actor Don Johnson's plantation, and he gets his first revenge, his first taste of revenge. There's a part where the Northrop, it's very difficult for him to hide him being educated because of the way he speaks. And his intelligence shines through, which doesn't go unnoticed by the Benedict Cumberbatch character. Cumberbatch actually appreciates Ford's intelligence, I should say Northrop's intelligence. It's the lower tier whites, the overseer, one overseer in particular, that has absolute disdain for this quote-unquote uppity nigger. So he keeps on picking at him and picking at him and picking at him until Northrop breaks and starts to beat him up. After he tried to beat him up initially, he turned on him and took the whip and, you know, started to whip his behind. And I said, whip his ass into next week.
Oh, man.
I couldn't stop it. The entire theater looked around. I didn't give a whip his ass into next week. You might have seen my mouth frothing, ladies and gentlemen. I actually had a blackout moment. I was frothing.
Well, the only thing I can add to this, right, is so
next
often. Yeah.
Go ahead.
So often you hear bigots and say, take your ass back to Africa or something like that, right? And it makes you wonder, if you take black youth up today, and actually take them back to Africa, how would they be able to survive? Because they don't know the struggles. They don't know the hardships, you know, of all of that. That's what I saw in that slave's face when he walked into the office. Like, wait, hold on. They're all dressed nice. It's a loving family. I see no marks of oppression on them anyway. This is actually a thing, you know, sort of that disbelief type of thing, you know? And that's what I tried to get across to the three youths behind me when I was watching this. Like, yeah, this was a thing, you know? You there's always been a struggle in some form or fashion. This has been a thing, you know? You can't run from history, all right? You can embrace history. You can learn about history, but you don't ever run from it. You have to confront it. You have to learn it. Because those that do not learn history are doomed to repeat it and repeat it and repeat it over and over again. That's the thing I hope people take out of this, all right? It is easy. It is easy to refine yourself, to look good in your eyes. Oh, I'm looking, but there's always somebody who will see you as a stereotype out there. There's always somebody, no matter how many strides you make, doesn't notice that and was quick to say, well, you're less than me. Pride in yourself, people. Afrinerd, back to you.
Yeah, you're touching on something also that, you know, listen, there's a lot of, and we'll try to, you know, I guess we could spare a few more moments on this topic because there's a lot of ancillary issues, just like you said, things that happened in the theater and things that made me really think after I saw the film. Of course, I saw a few folks with their phones on, Daryl. You know, since I have my eyes repaired, I have 20/15 vision. So I can see, not unlike Clark Kent himself, or with the Wakandan herbs, I see you. So I'm in the theater. I glance around. I see someone. It looked like they had something as big as an iPad. Bright light. I said, come on. This feels about, we saw Madge, I'm talking about Madonna. She pulled this crap at the Alamo Steakhouse. A few weeks ago when she saw this. I might have mentioned this on air, Captain, if you remember. Daryl, you know about the story with Madonna?
Yeah.
Hey, they treat him like any other. You cannot have that on during the movie. You have messages as you enter the theater to be considerate. You have messages before the movie plays. And yet some people don't listen. So Madonna, in that case, you're just like everybody else.
Well, she was banned. You know, they put out this big decree because they're notorious for really being a cinephile's haven. People who really, really love films. They dig this Alamo thing. It was started out in Texas. Ain't It Cool News, Harry Knowles put a lot of light on that theater. And I was always envious of, they showed all the 70s films. It's essentially a Friday's, like a Friday's restaurant, I think, Daryl. I've yet to be there, I think, but I'm going to go there soon. It's set where you can eat and dine and really get into the film. It's a different experience. And they do not play when it comes down to foolishness. So as far as Q is asking what happened, specifically what happened is Madonna, who people did not necessarily know when she was there. She was just some blonde in black. She is steady texting with her phone during 12 Years a Slave. Now, this woman has black children, if I'm not mistaken, that she adopted. So she is allegedly at this film, a serious film now, texting. An usher comes over to her and says, listen, I'm sorry, you're going to have to put that away. And she barks on him and says, enslaver. She called the usher an enslaver because he told her to knock it off about having this cell phone or this smartphone while this serious film is going. But really, regardless of whatever the subject matter would be, it would still be rude, but especially that. And then to throw the term enslaver at the usher. So she's been
real
banned.
Intelligence.
Well, she's supposed to have this high IQ. Still PWT, mind you. But she's supposed to have a high IQ. But be that as it may, I saw some of that Madonna business to be tribal at a film like 12 Years a Slave. So when you go into some of the younger folk needing to see this, I hope that it wouldn't be lost on them. Because I can't imagine, you know, phones were ringing also. A couple of times, phones were ringing, and a couple of people had their phones on where you could see the light during 12 Years a Slave. And all I can think of, what human being would not be able to take this serious? But then again, gentlemen, we have people who are taking selfies at funerals. I'll get into that later on in the show. But that's a new phenomenon. There's a website where people are taking selfies at funerals. So maybe, you know, if you could take it at a funeral, you can certainly do some nonsense with your phone at 12 Years a Slave. We have a nation of sociopaths.
Hey, this was the week that made Miley Cyrus look like a genius. That's all you need to know. And I'll get into that when we get into the selfies at a funeral thing.
Yeah, we got to talk about that. Just a few more things. We're going to wrap it up and go to another break and then to more discourse. We'll go back to comics. As far as the ancillary issues, obviously I saw nonsense in the theater. But what I thought about afterwards, well, actually, even in the theater with the trailers, I don't know if the trailers were the same for you, Daryl, but did you notice the theme? It was all black movies, or mostly black movies I saw as trailers. And they seem to be pushing the slavery theme now. I saw another film. I was trying to find out. I forgot the name of it. Did you see the trailer for another slavery film with a young woman that was born of the master, I think, and she was fell in love with someone. It's like basically an interracial romance during slavery times. Did you catch that trailer?
Yeah, but I can't name the movie offhand. I looked at it and I went, another one?
Yeah.
You know, I was just like, W. Kamau Bell had a joke this week about, 12 Years a Slave. Wait, did we just have Django? Hold on. And then Captain Phillips is the reverse. And I started laughing, and then I thought about, like, wait a second, there has been an awful lot of slavery, prisoner-related, you know, movie entertainment coming out recently. This is a weird, weird time in the movies for us, because we can applaud, but at the same time, you know, I'm a guy that likes to go to the movies to have fun. But anyway, back to you, Afro Nerd.
Well, that's the part that I thought was troubling. I could have sworn that I saw maybe at least two other slavery-themed movies that are forthcoming. And I'm not sure if that's listen, we need these films just as those of Jewish descent need to be – we all need to be reminded of the horrors of the Holocaust. This is the African Holocaust. So my only issue is – and we said this, and this is what Afro-Nerd Radio is about – we need balance. I'm going to shout out something from Sergio Mims's Shadow and Act, because they have a contest over there that's very important. A contest, I'll mention that in a minute, for them, because this is where the balance comes in. This is where the balance comes in. I think, and I've said this many times, these films would probably have greater resonance if they're balanced against something. But if it's just, well, we're going to do the slavery thing, and it becomes the hot thing. We are, like you said, Daryl, we're repeating. I felt like we were repeating some stuff. But this is not to take anything away from 12 Years a Slave, because it made me feel like I needed to do a personal reboot myself, where I'm not going to patronize. Not that I really did, but I don't even no World Star Hip Hop, no media takeout. I go there to be somewhat informed, to talk, to know about the foolishness so I can talk about it. I saw a young lady. I had to get gas in my car yesterday. I saw a young lady of color with a full-blown blonde wig or weave. And I looked at her. I looked at her like she was an alien. And this is before I saw 12 Years a Slave. When you see 12 Years a Slave after seeing, when you see it as a reminder, as a reboot, it looks crazy as hell. You are. That's just where you see how slavery still plays a role in the 21st century, where we have our women wearing these Caucasian hair hats, as I call it, Caucasian hair hats, Afro-Saxon toupees. They're wearing these Caucasian hair hats, ladies and gentlemen, with such reckless abandon, they might as well cock it to the side like a new era fitted. What's the difference? Just as you get a New York City Yankees cap, you might as well cock that weave to the side the same way. Utter insanity. So I have even more of a visceral, I can't get it. You're literally wearing the enslaver's hair hat on your head, and we're supposed to ride with this. So, sisters, you better come up. And brothers, like Daryl was talking about, I'm being tribal now for this one moment. You see a film like this, you start to say, you know what? We got to do better. The N-word, the quote-unquote nigga word in on wax, repeated as a type of black Tourette's, that's got to stop. Because when you see how it was originally used, you will not try to make excuses for it. I know Daryl is going to ride with me on this. If you saw how it was used and how you were dehumanized, you would not be trying to make it cool. So I would wish they would show this film during assemblies in grade school, not even at high school level, at grade school. But I don't know if it would straighten people out, Daryl. I don't know. I would hope it would, but this is the same movie I saw people still messing around with their cell phones. I can't call it. Anything else in closing? Captain, you've been quiet.
Yeah, Cap, got anything?
Well, I didn't see the movie, so I'm being quiet. That's essentially
okay.
What it is.
So, one of these days, we're going to have, and I'm going to let a little comic shop sneak in here, one of those eternal Omni-mind type things where we just learn as a people through osmosis, you know, that, hey, this isn't cool. Hey, it's okay to have fun, but at the same time, we can act with a little dignity, you know? And, hey, we've been yelling about it on the comic shop for years, okay? We can have the goofy, I'm going to get you sucker. We can have the blaxploitation revenge films. We can have the slavery films. Or we can have the bad street dramas. You know, like all of the ones the rappers make. Not many quality movies came out of that, you know? But we can do other stuff too, Hollywood. We can do other stuff too, black community. You know, if you do it well enough, people will watch it. That's what we want. We want a variety out there. Because we can, Caucasian people can act in anything. All right, we're seeing it with the Asian markets. If you look at their movies, they try to do everything. Black filmmakers, black writers, black musicians, you can do anything. Don't get pegged. Don't get stuck in a rut. Back to you, Afro Nerd.
Yeah, I saw the trailer for the Best Man, the 14-year sequel, and I actually liked the first one because I thought that's where you saw Terrence Howard really show what he's made of. This time around, okay, you know, there's that reminiscence kind of thing, Daryl. You know, but I'm in a different place now. I'm all about middle class depictions of black folk, but it's been so packaged and so Tyler Perry'd that I think I'm going to pass on this one. And I hate to say that, but I like the first one.
hey, you need to come at it with a different angle. The problem is the subject matter has been parodied so much, from comedies to people trying to take it serious, you know, and failing. Hey, what new can you add to it? You know, it's been hit every which way. But the problem is, you know, that there's people addicted to that, addicted to the Tyler Perry, addicted to that subject matter, that you can't get across to them, that you're just, hey, all they did was bring in a couple of the younger actors, put them in, they swept off the subject matter, they may have changed location, but essentially, pardon me, it is the same story you're getting again. Take person A, who has this as a network of friends, devout, philanderer, someone who doesn't know where they are, and someone that has a dark secret. Have a big social gathering, a wedding, a funeral, a family outing, all right? Have all the secrets laid bare. Oh, he slept with my wife. Oh, he's secretly gay. Oh, he... Star, have some creepy fight, and even creepier resolution, and boom, you have a great family movie. Oh, my God, I just described the Black Hallmark Channel. Back to you, Afternerd.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, as I said earlier, we had some technical difficulties, and now we're doing a sandwich broadcast where you really can't tell where Afternerd ends and where the comic shop begins. So without further ado, let's go to a quick Nerdcore groove. Oh, in about 2 minutes, Nerdcore, and then let's go to a comic book-related topic. I want to talk about, or I should say pulp-flavored discussion. Let's talk about the return of Misfits, Darryl, as well as Dracula Come to TV. So this is Drama in the PhD. Drama in the PhD by Monzi. Nerdcore Groove. We'll be back in a few moments. We'll be right back.
Yo, MC++, my rhymes are so fat. I'm P-Space complete, but I'll reduce you to 3-stat. My crew is so hard that we roll in NP, and bitches dereference my pointer for free. When I'm linear probing, they're like, damn, that's gigantic. I showed it to your mom, and she used horse semantic. She jumped like J&E up onto my erection, and I picked up that hole like straight garbage collection. Yeah, mark and sweep on these nuts, bitch. Get stolen by sucker MCs, I gotta sign my rhymes with PGP. But I keep on generating like a CFG, cause there's so much drama in the PhD. What's wrong in C++? Am I making you nervous? Even skanky fat hoes give you denial of service. You'll probably go to jail before you write your dissertation, so prepare your asshole for some internal fragmentation. Oh, penetration while they fill it up with jism. It's too bad you aren't closed under homomorphism. Your problem plus is that your typing ain't strict. In ML, my type is real, and your type is alpha dick.
I control my flow better than TCP. I rep the West Coast like Eazy-E. You best not run if you can't pass the GRE, cause there's so much drama in the PhD.
My flow is so intense that I will overflow your buffer. Corrupt your sack corner, making all your data suffer. I've got saturated edges, but your flow is sparser. Real gangsta, sip on yak, you just generate a parser. While you're busy popping sacks, I'll pop a cap in your skull. While you smoke your crack pipe, I'ma pipe you to dev, no. I may not have a label, but I rap like a star. I'm an unsigned long it, and you're an 8-bit char.
Your mom circulates like a public key, servicing more requests than HTTP. She keeps all the ports open like Windows ME. Oh, there's so much drama in the PhD.
D-word to your moms, I came to drop bombs. I've got more rhymes than San Jose's got .coms. I reps the farm like 50 reps Queens, with more power than multi-tape Turing machines. Blowing up the rap scene faster than factorial functions. I'm dope like PNP transistors, and I'll saturate your junctions. By the time you rhyme one line, I've already busted 10. You rap in exponential time, and I'm Big O of log n.
I run G, make N, GCC, and I ain't never called Malik without calling free. I'll beat your ass until it's colored like a red-black tree, cause there's so much drama in the PhD.
A little bit of fun, folks, again. That was Drama in the PhD, Monzi, giving you a little bit of Nerdcore. Perhaps not the best of Nerdcore. I assure you I will improve, but I thought that's just pretty comical record. All right, folks, again, the Comic Shop, Afternoon Radio. It's a mix-up. It's a mash-up. Dal, did you happen to see Dracula, Vlad the Impaler himself, on NBC?
Oh, come on. This is me. You know I'm not missing that. I mean, come on.
Well, what are your impressions?
Hey, my impressions is he can act in anything. My rant just now about guys who have to act in we have to branch out and act in anything. Look at Mr. Rice here, you know? He just got off, what was it, the Tudors, right? He just got off the Tudors, and now he takes on another classical role here as Mr. Tepes. Hey, the classical sets are great. The acting, we'll see. All right? I have faith in his acting. I want to see. I'm not really familiar with the rest of the cast. Let's see how they do this. The problem is Dracula's always been a one-off. All right? It's either really hokey or really, what's the word, cerebral in a way. All right? I'm not talking about Dracula. I'm not talking about Dracula 2000. I'm not talking about any of those B-movies with him. But I'm talking about Christopher Lee, was it in the 70s? He made Dracula into the Vision we know with the cape, with the classic talking and the I'm better than you almost arrogance. See what Jonathan brings to the role. Let's see where he takes Dracula. Let's see if the writers have a plan here. Or is this going to be just, I hate to use the term, or is this going to be like Smallville, where it becomes less an overarching plot, but more, oh, here's the problem for this week, you know? That's good for, like, stuff like A-Team and Knight Rider and, you know, where it's week to week. So with Dracula, you have to build the melodrama. You have to create the atmosphere. You have to make it, well, it is vampires, but you have to make it realistic where everything's not solved by the end of the episode. And hell, it's Dracula. He's one of the most evil sons of guns that's ever been created. You know, let's remember who he's based on. The Impaler, that guy was not good. Let's see how far they could take it without people starting to feel it's repetitive. Back to you, Afrinet.
Yeah, again, you're talking about Jonathan Rhys-Meyers, Irish actor, as Daryl talked about. He's been on a number of different properties, Bend It Like Beckham, Mission Impossible 3. So he's making the rounds. I'm not so sure. You know, it's hard to say. They try to really put so many different versions of this character. I mean, just like Sherlock Holmes has different versions, I guess they're doing the same, or giving Dracula the same treatment. The way he's being positioned that makes it a little weird is that he's being positioned kind of sort of like a superhero. Wouldn't you say that, Daryl, in some way? That he,
yeah.
now his adversaries or the corporations. This is like some kind of weird allegory for a bloodsucker going after the corporations of that time, of the late 19th century. He's literally going after corporate heads, the secret society that happened to be corporate insidious controllers. Kind of, sort of. You know, he's a fearsome character, but he's under control because, well, he's just not going to bite anybody. He's going to bite the corporations. I mean, that premise seems a little goofy.
How long could that possibly last? That's the thing.
That's the issue. You know,
go ahead.
What I was going to say was, I have to give it up for as far as the sets. This thing looks like they put some money into it. I mean, it has such a lush, expensive look for a Friday night TV series. Now, usually Friday nights is a death knell. It's what, Grimm is the lead-in for this?
Mm-hmm.
Is that – so, I mean, they have some kind of plan for Dracula. Was it 10 episodes for the season, I think? So they're even doing a British thing maybe where they're trying to keep it short? I don't know. I haven't even seen – I was in the middle of the second episode, so – after this broadcast, I will check out the second episode. But I thought the first one, as far as the look, very impressive. Very impressive.
Well, here's the thing. If they do it like the British, if they're using that formula, you know, it's usually two episodes to set up the characters, set up the settings and all of that. Middle six episodes to flesh out the plot, to create the tangents, you know, and then the final two episodes to end the that season's main plot and to put down the feelers for the next season's plot, you know? If we're using the formula, which we're about to get into with Misfits, if we're using the British formula, that's usually the British formula. The thing with Dracula is he can play refined, but you know the beast is underneath. You know the beast is there. You know that there's something inherently evil. I don't know how well Dracula as an anti-hero is going to work. You know? We have to see how they do this. Back to you, Aphrodite.
Dracula as Wolverine, or Dracula as the Punisher. That's kind of sort of where we're going at. And also, we're talking about his main arch rival, Van Helsing. He pretty much has a detente with him. He has an understanding, or he's brokered a deal. So I think Van Helsing is the person that – well, first of all, Van Helsing is the person that brings him back to life. That's another element also. He goes into his grave, and he's able to reanimate Dracula. And he brokers a deal with Dracula to go after these corporate people. That just sounds – why we're not seeing a Black Panther film? They can't wrap their heads around that. But they can wrap around Dracula going after corporations very easily.
And Van Helsing being the one to reanimate him. That's probably the biggest plot hole of it so far. So, like, knowing what Dracula has done to the Van Helsing family, knowing the history, then Van Helsing is the one to reanimate Dracula and thinks he can control him? You know, that's where, you know, we love to look at it as a type of fantasy type thing, but every so often common sense comes in. Sometimes you have to use a monster to fight a monster. Okay, they're corporations. Dracula's what you're going to release? Oi, this is so tremendously bad. And I can see the captain back there laughing because he's going to rip the hell out of this show after three episodes.
Yeah, I'm curious. Did you have to check this out yet, Captain?
Of course. Absolutely. At this given time, I really don't have anything negative to say about the show. I'm still giving it a chance.
Feeling it out.
Yeah, I got through the first episode. It wasn't any problem. I haven't seen the second episode as of yet. You know, a lot of these shows, I cannot get through the first episode, like Tomorrow People. You know, but I didn't have any problem getting through the first episode. I thought it was interesting. I didn't have anything negative to say. I just want to see where they're going with it at this given juncture in time. Let's see. By episode four, we shall see.
He brings up Tomorrow People.
Well, hold on. I want to go back in. I haven't seen Tomorrow People yet, but I something.
You still haven't seen it?
Well, listen. The reason why? Because I'm hearing it's another CW, black folk, brown folk, yellow folk.
I couldn't get
people of color. This ability to have cognitive dissonance. that I say black folk have, but white folk have it too. They, we live in New York. We're seeing – listen, I told you, Bill de Blasio may undoubtedly end up being the mayor of New York. He has a multiracial family. You see so many different folks of color, and I have to throw in even alternate sexual persuasions now, whether you agree or disagree. The landscape is so expansive now. To have this make-believe 1950-esque world, I have a hard time dealing with it. I mean, well, you know, Hold on. You're gonna call something tomorrow, and it should be called yesterday, people. Go ahead.
I think the captain will agree with this. Tomorrow's People's title should have been, well, we wanted to do Teen Titans and X-Men, and we wanted to do a little Akira, but we didn't want to touch Asian folk that have strong personalities. So we're going to give you this bland remake of Generation X meets Doom Patrol, but everybody's beautiful. It would be the greatest title of a series ever made, but that's just the description. Like, we've seen everything the British have done with people of with powers. We see what they do in comic books, but we'll hire some of the most unimaginative writers in history to use every cliche in the book and combine it all with some of the greatest actors the Disney and Nicktoons have ever produced. And here's tomorrow, people.
Since we're talking about tomorrow, people, we can easily segue into the Misfits. Now, Misfits, fifth season, we spoke about this before, folks. I definitely applaud this sci-fi fantasy series. Again, we're talking about type of X-Men, but these are true Misfits. These are young people that are caught up in community service. They're doing community service, and they acquire superpowers because of this storm, this event in London, in England, and various people. Some folks do not get powers. Some people do get powers because of this event. And now we're heading into the fifth season, the final season, so I lament that this is going to be the last season. The first two seasons I really absolutely adored. But I stuck with, you know, this goes back to the level of talent when it comes down to the acting prowess of the Brits, that even when they change people, I still stick around. They still get people that kind of still can do it. Usually if you change a character, you lose me. For some reason, I've noticed in different, and this is being an Anglophile, I guess, so I'm not that blind. But when I do see some of these British properties, Daryl, when they change actors around, they get a guy that can still come in there, a guy or a female, I should say a lady, pardon me, they can still do it. So I still care about Misfits, and I'm hearing that they're looking to do a Misfits movie with the original cast. Oof. So we'll see if that comes to fruition. But I like the product that comes out of Britain, and I know that for our British listeners, they will tell you more of the nuances that we may not be picking up. We are fully aware that there's racism everywhere, and I've been told that, you know, not everything is so rosy in UK, and we know that too. But there's still some things going on when it comes to British sensibilities that everybody's not so beautiful. They have beautiful people there too, but not to the extent that the Americas do it. People in the Americas, they have this whole glossy thing going on. Everyone has to really, they have to shine. It seems like what's happening in Britain is that they seem to let the acting prowess do the shining. So then not everyone is so picture perfect, and it's better for the palate. It's better for the presentation. So the Misfits, season 5, last season, another sci-fi group with powers. I just love the Misfits. I would definitely advise our listenership to check out Misfits. And I'm also hearing there's going to be a U.S. version of the Misfits. But undoubtedly, they will put some shellac on that too. America will shellac the hell out of Misfits. But I could be wrong.
Darryl? No, you're right. It has to stay the way that it is. It's just, you know, from what it is at the inception, once America puts their hand, they just mess it all up. You understand? They whitewash it. That's exactly what they do. You know? They CW it. No, it has to stay the way it is. That's just what it is. Don't bother with this, America. Don't do it. It's going to be so-so at best. That's
or
it.
They'll heroes it. They'll try to do something different, all right? And then the fan base will get very vocal about, oh, she's got powers? Those powers are whack. We can't handle this. You know, what Misfits does, is no one's elite in Misfits. If you look at the people that have gotten powers and you've gotten, look at the situations, all right, there's no one that's listed as better. There's no, lack for a better word, pretty people in Misfits. They are beautiful to look at people, but everybody's flawed. You got flawed characters in Misfits. But they're able to weave the plot in between through where it's a true ensemble type thing, where the focus slips, where you're not stuck with the same situations and characters every week, even though you have the same situations and characters every week. They're able to put a fresh spin on it, on the notion. The problem is America's a fast food society. We want the same crap over and over again. Even us complain about we want more diversity. But at the same time, we fall into our own same hang-ups and platforms. Like I just kept on saying, I go to movies, I want to be entertained. I edge away from documentaries and timepiece dramas and stuff like that because they bore me. That's me being closed off. Every now and then I'll open myself up. The problem is when your writers, producers themselves off, we don't get a Misfits. We get a Tomorrow People. You know, we don't get the dream realized of Batman show. Because it's tied up illegal, you know? So we'll talk about making a Birds of Prey, but we won't have it and have any Batman connotations. We're talking about doing Grayson with all the younger Bat villains, but we won't use Batman, all right? We'll make an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but you know what? No capes. We won't do that. No capes and limited superpowers. Yet we'll be in the Marvel Universe. You know, Misfits has none of that. They're creating their own mythology, and you could see the characters succeed, but most of the time we've gotten these characters fall apart under the pressure of having their powers. It is fun to have powers, but at the same time, when you use powers, there are dire consequences often attached to it, and Misfits is not afraid to show you those consequences. Back to you, Afro Nerd.
Darryl talks right, like he has powers.
Listen, let's go to a quick break, gentlemen, and then I want to turn things around from pulp and pop to going into something a bit more serious. I want to devote maybe 3 to 5 minutes on blackface costuming. Spoke about it last week, but I have a little bit more, just another, more of an insight on this. Shouting out Q. He felt that in the instance of Julianne Hough, that she didn't really have any ill will in her head or in her heart, if I'm interpreting what he said. And he felt that we should have given her a pass, that it really wasn't that serious. And we respectfully disagreed, and I thought of something else. Maybe I'm repeating myself.
Why Miley Cyrus is a genius.
Well, yeah, you have something to add about that. So, yeah, we're going to talk about that. But I'm going to talk about that, and I want to talk a little bit more about what's happening with Stop and Frisk. So we're going to go from pop pulp to an Afro Nerd topic, and then we'll go right back to pop.
What?
Shop and Frisk?
Again. It was Stop and Frisk / Shop and Frisk. So we're gonna talk about something a bit more. We've been on this for a few weeks now. The issue has not really left us. It's a very heavy topic in New York. There's always something new to discuss each day regarding this. More people to sue. Macy's in Long Island, a Macy's that I frequent, there's a lawsuit against that Macy's because of profiling. So there's more going on. So without further ado, we're going to go back to Urban Alternative. This is Bandy, Zap Mama, and Eric Badu. Oh, in about 2.5 minutes, and we'll be right back. Let's groove. Back, folks. Again, this is the Grindhouse, a kind of mashup, a rarity, where the Afro Nerd Show as well as the Comic Shop merge together, pop, pulp, and serious fare, giving you the best of black rock, Afro punk, urban alternative, psychedelic soul, progressive hip hop. We played the good stuff that conventional radio refuses to play. Again, that was Zap Mama and a friend, Erica Badu. Bandy. The call-in number, 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. I see we have some calls. I'm going to open up the lines as well, gentlemen. And I also want to talk about a little bit more, just a skosh. We pretty much laid it down. We laid it down, the captain and I, last week about our thoughts concerning 21st century blackface. Again, emphasis on 21st century blackface. But I'm going to open the lines, and then we'll see what this person has to say as well. 267, this is Afroner. Tell us who you are, where you're calling from. What's up?
Yeah, I'm calling from Philadelphia. I wanted to speak on the Barney's department store situation. From what I understand, that's a very high-end store, and usually only people who are like Wall Street executives or people who are wealthy shop there. And there's a problem in the country with people making up different types of credit cards where the people have like a clone type of credit card where they're using someone else's credit, and the credit card
it's faulty. It's false.
Right, is false. So I can understand why the department store security had the kind of reaction that it did if it saw somebody dressed in a baseball cap and jeans and they bought a belt that was over $300. So they're naturally going to profile people to see if they can catch someone with these types of credit cards. So, I can't tell people, you can't tell people what to do with their money. But usually in stores like that, they basically have a certain type of clientele that they automatically expect to come into the store and buy something. And if they
have somebody come in
and they don't fit the profile, then that's automatically going to set off alarm bells.
All right, hold on one second. Hold on. I'm going to put you on hold. Give me like 3 minutes, and I'm going to bring you back in because you jumped a little. So let's hold on. We're going to talk about it again. Hold on. Let me talk about my costume thing, and then we'll get right back to you. So just hold on. Because we're jumping around a little bit, gentlemen. We will talk about it. Dow, first of all, what was this deal with Miley Cyrus? Is this something to do with her wearing Little Kim's costume, 1999, or what? She wasn't in blackface on that, by the way.
Wait. And that's why I said she's a genius, all right? The Miley Cyrus we expect is somebody's going to do something for shock value, and the Julianne Hough Huff, whoever she is, because I don't watch her type of stuff, is all over the news because she's a public figure, and she does something that's stupid. Miley Cyrus, we know, is all about making news, all right? It'd be very easy for her to put some kind of bronzing thing on her, you know, and that, I'm Lil' Kim, and we'd all get pissed and all that. But you know what? She made news because she resisted it. And I guarantee there were members in her social circle that went, you know, it ain't a true Lil' Kim because you're still white. You know, it ain't a true thing. But this is what we were talking about, and for your audience now, we talked about it with cosplayers and stuff when it came to a Jordy LaForge type of thing, you know, where the visor would be enough because it's iconic, and we know, oh, you're doing LeVar Burton as Jordy LaForge. Oh, that's cool, without resorting to using brown makeup or anything, all right? With Julianne Hough, just by the hair and the jumpsuit alone, if you saw Orange is the New Black, you would know she's crazy eyes. But no, she goes the extra limit to freaking put the brown and then put the picture up on Twitter and then tries to unsuccessfully remove the makeup, which made her even look worse. All right? Miley Cyrus is a genius because she knows that outfit by Lil' Kim is iconic enough that if you've seen it on the net or anything, you would know one time it's Lil' Kim. So you didn't need to go the extra mile. And for that, Miley Cyrus, I applaud you. Yes, I actually just said the words, Miley Cyrus is a genius, and Miley Cyrus, I applaud you, because she resisted that stupidity of Caucasians during this holiday to go the extra dumb mile. And for that, like I said, I applaud her. Now, Cap, kind of dissenting opinion, I think.
No, I don't think so.
No opinion. Back over to Afro Nerd.
Yeah, again, folks, we spoke about this last week, and it wasn't heated or anything, but I think we just had a difference of opinion, which is fine. What's happening is that percentage-wise, we're seeing more and more black folk and white folk, especially black folk who are willing, I suspect this is a generational thing, who are willing to give a pass on the blackface thing. I think anywhere from 20 to 40% of black folk now find this not offensive. So this is starting to creep up again. And our friend Q Storm, who says he rides with us, and I believe him, because everyone's entitled to have their separate opinions. We're not always going to agree. He seemed to think that Julianne Hough was of a kind mind or kind heart, and she meant no ill will with this. And she had some admiration for the actress or the character Crazy Eyes from Orange is the New Black, and she just wanted to be that character. My thinking, and I'm along the lines of Daryl B., is we'll know who you are with the costume. And actually, it's funnier when you don't put the makeup on. When Daryl Hammond, I was trying to figure out the comedian's name, Daryl Hammond from SNL, when he would play Jesse Jackson and have the hair, the affect, everything down as Jesse Jackson, you know, the mustache, everything minus the dark complexion, it was funny because it was still Jesse Jackson. He was still Jesse Jackson. You knew who he clearly was, and it was funnier. Just as if you saw a black person, let's say I was going to put on a George Washington costume, powdered wig and everything, maybe an axe chopping down the cherry tree or whatever, you would still know brown-skinned Afro-nerd is George Washington. It's funnier when you still know who the person clearly is. If you saw a white person with those shades on, those infamous legendary shades, Jordy LaForge shade, you wouldn't need the black chalk because you just know who it is. Anytime I've seen actors portray a white actor portray a black person, and you clearly knew who they were imitating, it was funny as all get out. It was actually funnier. Now the only thing that I could think of that makes it more cemented for me. Follow me on this, ladies and gentlemen. The intent of blackface has always been to poke fun at you. Let me repeat that for you. Blackface goes back almost to our inception being here as captured folk. But let's say specifically minstrelsy starts in the 1830s. So from 1830 to, let's say, 1959. From 1830 to 1950-something, we're led to believe, first of all, it was always intended to be, we're poking fun at you, black man. You had household products that are even sold to this day in Asia that clearly said something like darky toothpaste. So your skin color was always something to be ridiculed. So for all these centuries, it was always purely intended as a joke. So for 300 years and a day, it's a joke. But for 300 years and the second day, it's not. So you lost me on that. So it's always been intended to be humorous. But the next day, it's not funny. It's not funny anymore. We don't have to worry about it. It's not funny. This can be argued with the N-word. Looking at 12 Years a Slave, using that as a template, that word was never a nice word. So all of a sudden, we have to erase all of that intent, and in a day, or a decade, or a year, or 5 years, whatever the length of time that people want to erase, we have to erase 300 to a year, or 300 to a day. I'm not doing that. It's always been used as humor, and now I have to trust follow me, gentlemen, I have to trust that in your heart you mean something differently. I have to trust you. But your culture poked fun at me for 300 years and 300 hours. But that last hour, guess what? All that doesn't mean anything anymore. And the young folk who refuse to pick up a book, when you hear them now, they are going to be I've seen them on the internet, Daryl. They're very dismissive of that history. All they can do, because someone born in 1990, all they can do is remember 1993 going forward. They can't remember 1989. So what they'll do to combat your argument is, well, what about white chicks? What about white chicks? The Wayans brothers lampoon white people. You know what? We're allowed to pull out that whip like Django did. We're allowed to pull out that whip like Mr. Northrop did and whip your ass. We're allowed to do that. It's called Turnabout is Fair Play. You can't compare one movie to 300 years of servitude. Look at Afner sounding like a progressive. But I know the history. I know the history, gentlemen. You can't compare white chicks to all the movies, the print ads, the household products, the 18th century minstrel shows. You can't compare it to one movie. But they do it, though. They tell you, white chicks, what about that? Oh, okay, let me pull out the book. Let me pull out the library. That's it. Whip his ass!
Can I chime in?
Sure.
Okay. I think this is what everyone's missing pertaining to this. All right? This, and I haven't heard anybody say this, it's a light skin versus dark skin thing. This is why people want to give her a pass. You understand? She wasn't dark enough. If she would have went petroleum black, the whole internet would have been in an uproar. Everybody would have went crazy. She didn't go dark enough. That's what it comes down to. She didn't go dark enough. She pulled a fast one on all of you people that want to give her a pass. That's it. Which was wise. But she still got caught. She just didn't go dark enough.
Yeah, that's another thing. For her to pretend that she didn't know something about what she was doing, why use the bronzer?
That's right.
Because if you weren't trying to use the bronzer, you would have went all out black. So you went light skin black.
I still caught you,
your ass.
There you go. That's why I didn't trigger your tribalism, black people. If you'd have went petroleum black, you would have flipped out.
The only place where I think this someone did this and pulled it off without there being an outrage was Tropical Thunder with Robert Downey Jr. Outside of that, because they treated it with both humor and seriousness with, I forget the name of the young black actor that was in that, when he approached them on it in the movie. Because it looked at it face to face, and at the same time you were able to go, you know, those reasons are sound. I do feel a little offended, but the reasoning is sound. You know, and that scene was hilarious. And the problem here is, the problem here is just she had the hair was perfect. The yellow jumpsuit was perfect. If you'd seen the show, you would have known who she is. You didn't need to add any color to it, but she did. Back to
she darkened the skin a little or enough. You know, she didn't go full retard. She went half retard. Going back to Tropical Thunder, and also with Tropical Thunder, Daryl, we have to remember that they put a lot of thought into that, and he was playing a character who was essentially, he was actually playing a Julianne Hough as a character. He was playing someone who was being black, who was doing blackface. So that's what it is. He was playing a person trying to pull that off, trying to get away with it. And the actual black actor was constantly poking him, saying, "You can't do that." That was the difference. That was the brilliance of that. It was a lot of work into him being able to get away with that, and plus of who Robert Downey is as far as his acting prowess. But if that black actor wasn't there to poke him in his behind every 5 minutes, it would not have gone as well. There was a lot of stuff going on there. Let me go to the phones. Okay, 201, Afro Nerd, your thoughts.
Hey, guys, it's Q-Storm. How you doing?
Pretty good. Not trying to beat you up, Q. I'm just giving you my impression.
Hey, listen, I'm a big boy. I can take it. But I'm not going to monopolize your time. I just want to ask a question. You know, being someone who's been deepertized, if you will, I just have a question. Are we claiming to live in a post-racial world or not? Because if we are, and we want to claim, as we always do, that I am not defined by the color of my skin, then why are we making a big deal about the color of someone putting skin color on themselves to portray a costume? If I'm not defined by the color of my skin, why is this an issue?
It's an issue, Q, because she shouldn't have put color on her face to begin with. My color is not a costume. We've seen other people who did these things in a sophisticated way where they did not have to put the color part of it. You're not playing a role in this case. It's just a goofy costume. It's not necessary for you to be black. Like, are you seeing black people at every turn when they portray white characters? Daryl and myself saw plenty of these, and Andy Kathy was there too. We saw plenty of black cosplayers portraying white characters without the white makeup. It didn't come to their mind like, well, if I put on a Superman suit, I gotta put white face on. I still know it's Superman. I mean, why when you reverse it, they gotta put that black face on there, Q? Come on now. Like I said, for 300 years, it was meant as a joke. Now, for 300 years and a day, the next day, they had decided it's not a joke anymore. I didn't get that email. My email's not working. Sorry, I didn't get the email.
Well,
beat your ass. Go ahead.
Well, listen, if we are going to be discerning black men, as you are a discerning black man, as is Captain, as is Daryl, as is myself, I believe, we should be discerning enough to know a person, the difference between Julianne Hough putting on blackface and Miley Cyrus putting on blackface. And let me just say this. If we want to champion having a black Heimdall in the Thor film series, if we want to champion having a black Human Torch, okay, we want to complain about the people that are wearing blackface that are completely innocuous, then we can't have it both ways. We can't champion the colorizing of these white heroes and then complain when people are innocuously putting on blackface with no intention of racism. We can't have it both ways. You say that all the time.
Hold on, Darryl. I'll give it to you in a minute.
Right.
The problem is I don't know their intent. I don't know how you know their intent. How do you know Julianne Hough's intent? We already told you she put bronzer on. So she knew something about putting on blackface. She knew that let me not go full retard. Let me go half retard. Let me just touch on this a little. It was unnecessary. It's unnecessary. We get who you are. It's unnecessary to put the black paint on. That's not being discerning. And you're talking about actors portraying. That's not blackface. That's just doing a role. They're not putting on whiteface. Like, in other words, when Idris plays Heimdall, he's not putting on whiteface to play Heimdall. He's a black guy in Asgardian clothing. That's not the same thing as putting on coloring for us to know you're playing a black character. If I'm taking a white role, putting on white makeup, then don't put on black makeup for my role.
Okay, and I will throw this in. I go like, okay, you know what? You're probably thinking it's good that, excuse me, Jillian Huff, where's your friend network? What do your friends have to be like? You sure you want to add the bronzer? I mean, I see the hair, I see the jumpsuit, I know who you are. We really don't need the bronzer. Just think about this before you take that selfie. Think about this before you put this picture up on Twitter. And just think about what you're doing.
And
they want to have friends that were checker.
And Q, one other thing, I would ask you this: Do you think it's a fair thing that any time a white person wants to portray someone who's black, do you think it's fair for them to always put on black makeup? Let's go that way. Let's go full retard. Do you think anytime they want to put on anytime there's a black character for Halloween, prove of them always having to do that? Are you comfortable with that? The next character is somebody else. Do you think that's a requirement? Is it a requirement?
I don't know if it's a requirement or not, but I can tell you this. If I think I'm discerning enough to know, you know, because pop culture surrounds us and immerses us, you know, I read the trades, I read Entertainment Weekly. I think I'm discerning enough to know if a person has a frat boy mentality and puts on the black face and the Afro wig and is making fun of me, as opposed to someone who maybe admires the character. And I guess I have other things to fight. I want to choose my battles more carefully, and I'm not going to have a battle with Julianne Hough over putting on blackface because she admires a character on a fictional show.
Okay.
You lost me on this one, Q. Daryl?
No, but it is a reasonable argument he does bring up. I mean, for everybody, that line is different, you know? There's some things that are just outright wrong, which we'll get to with the Barney's thing next. You know, there's a discernible line about what's wrong and right there, and the previous caller brought up. You know, the line is changing or blurred or already crossed with so many people. Like, for us, we got outraged with Q.
Captain, you
be quiet.
I will
say this. If Miley Cyrus had put on blackface, I wouldn't be happy about that because I know what she's about. She's made clear what her intentions are. She wants to join the black gang, if you will. She said, I want to get some of that black, I want to become more black or something, she said about her music. She sees it as a commodity.
But you could also say that maybe because she's a little bit more intimate with blackness, and I say that in quotes, maybe she knew a little something that Julianne Hough didn't. Julianne Hough's inner circle is not as multiracial as she. And also, I'm not so comfortable of her even liking this crazy eyes character, because there's another thing. I'm going to bring it up there. I've only seen one episode of Orange is the New Black, so I'm not really familiar with that character. I just know by what she looks like. The character looks like a minstrel character. And anytime when we see these things, it's so much about some whites endear themselves to these minstrel characters in the modern day. But they will not endear themselves, I don't know, someone like Dinah Washington or Lena Horne or Coretta Scott King, or I can go down the line. But when it's the clowns, they really love you. But when there's a whole roster of black talent, black culture, black heroes you could admire, but you always go to the lowest common denominator. Some blacks and some whites seem to have a penchant for the lowest common black denominator. When you try to go a little higher than that, they get confused. That's it.
But see, okay, D-Bird, I'm going to say this real quick. There's a story you tell every now and then that I love the story. You told this story about you pulled up to a stoplight and some white girls pulled up next to you, and they were shouting, nigga this, nigga that. and you and they stopped when they saw you, and you said, why did they stop when they saw me? We've commodified that word. We've sold that word. My question to you is, why are you throwing shade at Jillian Hough? Go after the producers of the show who created that character. It's the same thing.
Yeah, well, it's the problem is, and I hear where you're going with this, and to be more accurate to our listening audience who's unfamiliar with that, they were chanting a DMX song, My Niggas. So they bought this record. They were singing it just as if I bought the Star Spangled Banner. If I were to sing that, I have no control over that. This is something else. We're talking about a cultural standard that's been around. Blackface has been around. So it's in the bedrock of white racist culture.
Word nigger is just as entrenched. How do you distinguish between those two?
Like I said, the line has been blurred.
I'll tell you why. At least white people, some white, but they're trying real hard to not call you nigga to your face. When they put on blackface makeup, it's them calling you nigga to your face. That's the difference.
Pretty good.
Oh, I know it's good. High cognitive ability.
Oh, here we go.
This is what I'm trying to tell you. They did it for so many years, and it was purely meant to ridicule you. Hey, darky. They put darky on their household products, Q. So it's always been about your coloring. So now they're going to color themselves up. They've always poked fun at you by putting that blackface makeup on. So the next day, they just up and decide, well, in my heart, Q, I mean something different. I'm not buying it. I got my whip out like Northrop. I got my whip out like Django. I'm going to beat your ass. Sorry, folks. I'm on a high. You can't bring Apple to a movie like that. I'm on a high. I'm on a reboot after seeing 12 Years a Slave. You're not gonna paint your face and poke fun at my beautiful black skin. And it is beautiful. Like, I get muscular, forget it. You're not poking fun at me. I'm not wearing a Caucasian hair hat, Q. After I saw this film, and I want you to see it, we have sisters that I will tell you, I'm going to have a hard time dating so many sisters now. I saw a sister yesterday at the fuel pump wearing a back-length Caucasian hair hat, blonde, black-skinned. Why? Why are they doing this? We're like fools to the world, Q. Look, who would do that? She might as well cock it to the side like a New Era hair hat. New Era fitted Yankee cap, same thing. Enough. Don't paint your skin and poke fun at me.
All right. We're out of time.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, we're out of time.
It was a great show, fellas. I hear where you're coming from, but all right.
And we didn't talk about the X-Men trailer.
Blade Block Talk Radio.
Yeah, well, they scored us. Well, you know, it is what it is. I'm going to be quiet. All right, listen, we have to come. We have to have you more for these segments, Darryl, because you definitely can hold your own. Folks, it's been real. Unfortunately, we had some technical difficulties. We'll be back Wednesday for the Midweek in Review show. Gentlemen, Q, I think John from Philly, we appreciate you coming through. We'll do it again on Wednesday at 7 p.m. This is Tall Black Guy and Durando. I don't want to leave. See you.
I love you, baby.